The summer movie juggernaut keeps on churning with an unusually heavy release schedule. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Every few weeks this summer, we've been looking at contemporary cinema and discussing the latest big screen offerings with area cinephiles, with the latest Pixar animated film Inside Out going head-to-head with the time travel action sci-fi film Terminator Genesis. It's a good time to have my friend Gene Creel back on the program. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Chuck.
I want to mention you used to teach film studies in both high school at El Paso High and here at UTEP. I'm thinking one or maybe both of these films would have been very popular with your students. Why don't we start with Inside Out, the latest Pixar release?
Okay. Yes, definitely. Yes. Inside Out is the latest bit of magic from Pixar. It's directed by Pete Docter, who also did Up and Monsters, Inc. for Pixar. But this is a mind-bending exploration of what makes an 11-year-old tick. Riley is a happy, well-adjusted young girl, loving parents, loving her life and home in Minnesota, and then they move to San Francisco. And initially, Riley's okay, but on her first day in school, when the teacher asks her to explain to the class what it's like to live in Minnesota, and she begins to talk about her friends and her beloved hockey and ice skating, and she suddenly realizes that these memories that have given her such pleasure have now become downers. And she experiences sadness and fear, and then segues into anger and disgust toward her parents and disgust with the room in her new house in San Francisco. And this, of course, becomes center stage of the film.
Right.
This is where those emotions, joy and sadness, anger, fear and disgust, are given voice and color and form, and they become the major players.
Literally personified.
Literally, literally. Of course, Joy, who has primarily been in control in headquarters, you know, there's so many neat turns of phrase there in the film.
Just behind the eye.
Right.
In the mind somewhere.
So Joy, of course, realizes now Riley is in despair, and this is not allowable. And so she's determined to retrieve and store the most pleasant memories that she can and get Riley back on track. And so this begins the journey. But what really sets the film apart, of course, is the interaction, the infighting, and the conflict among those five emotions. And this is really the core of the film. And we, the audience, as well as Riley, begin to realize how important emotions are in our lives. And they make up that total picture, and they also dictate our actions for good or for worse. And it's
and
sort
how
of
our
a,
memories are malleable.
Absolutely. Like sadness. Well, the memories are stored in balls of different color, and sadness will touch a golden, joyful memory, and it will become blue and sad. And for Riley, it's almost like sense and sensibility for preteens.
It becomes almost an Odyssey film as particularly the two characters, Joy and Sadness, have to make their way through her subconscious to try to get back to headquarters, if you will, to control how she's reacting in the real world. But it reminded me a little bit of The Wizard of Oz. There's this great gleaming tower that they're trying to get back through, and they're having to take this very circuitous path through sometimes scary territory.
Absolutely.
Of the mind. All this is happening inside her mind, which is fascinating in its own right.
Yes, the contents of her brain, as of course we all know, not only is full of emotion, but of other ideas as well. I loved Goofball Island, you know, which is where all the silliness and nonsense of childhood is allowed to run free. She has Family Island, which is of paramount importance.
Right.
There's Honesty Island. There's Hockey Island. I love the fact that Riley played hockey, not ballet or swimming or gymnastics. She played hockey.
You know?
But there is the darkness, as you said. They go through abstract thought, which was full of fragmentation and deconstruction, and obviously something Riley is not mature enough yet to process. And then they even descend into subconscious, where our deepest fears lurk.
Yeah. You mentioned Pete Docter wrote and directed this, and also did Up, and goes all the way back to the beginning of Pixar. He was wrote the original story for Toy Story.
Oh, that's
20 years
yes.
ago. It's amazing how many of these films he's touched. But I was thinking about all of those films in relation to this one. And, you know, they're all about growing old or older And they all have to do with our memories. I heard him on Fresh Air recently talking about his own traumatic childhood of also experiencing a move like this, I believe, to San Francisco, being uprooted. Yeah. And, you know, the film just works so well for just about any age. Maybe mm-hmm. real young won't get too much out of this film, but certainly by the age of 10.
True. I polled a few young people who'd seen the film, most all of whom were 10 and older, uh-huh. which I think is more appropriate here. And they all were enchanted with the film. Oh, joy, they love that blue hair she has.
I think what sets it apart, too, is that these Pixar films, in relation to other animated offerings, feel fully dimensional. They are like full live-action narrative films in that they've got many, many layers of meaning to them and just rich, so rich. Pixar lavishes lots of time on the gestation of these films. You know, mm-hmm. this probably was in the works for a number of years before we saw it. And I want to point out one example of that. You know, there's this almost really a throwaway moment where they're going through the mind and these two characters, Joy and Sadness, knock over two crates. One is labeled facts and the other is labeled opinions.
Right.
And without missing a beat, they both comment that, wow, you know, they're trying to put them back in the right box, but they comment that how close they look.
How can you tell the difference?
How do you
right?
tell the difference between facts and opinions? Because they look so much alike. And then we just keep right on moving. It doesn't dwell on the moment, but the film is full of those little moments that will make it great for repeated viewing,
but
have a lot of adult insight into the world.
Exactly. And I like, too, at the end when resolution has been achieved and they're standing in front of the control board where all the emotions are, and it's gotten bigger and bigger,
right.
and we can just anticipate.
More complicated.
Yes, they anticipate all of the emotions to come down the road.
Well, now we segue from a film about, if you will, the malleability of memory and how we choose to shape who we are by how we remember, to a film about changing the past to produce a different future, literally. Very different film, Terminator Genesis. For those who don't know the franchise, we go all the way back to 1984 with the original Terminator, a huge low-budget success that made Arnold Schwarzenegger almost an instant summer action staple. So this is installment number 5 of just 31 years. So we get Terminator Genesis, where if people don't know the story, it's basically in a nutshell about a present-day computer program that nukes the world and builds a cyborg army of Terminators, which are working hard to rid the planet of the last of humanity. And, of course, there's a human resistance in the future, which in the films is led by a character by the name of John Connor. And the computers in the future and these Terminators believe their best hope at finally exterminating humanity is to go back in time and kill John Connor's mother before he's even born. And that's really sets up most of the action and plot lines through the 5 films, including this one. And so we start in the future, and we're again sending a protector back in time to 1984. So we return to the period of the original film. What's fascinating, I think what the script does right, is it has a lot of really interesting conceptual leaps with the time travel narrative. We get to revisit some of the time periods that the previous films covered. Unfortunately, you know, the deja vu there also extends to the directing, I thought, and a lot of the scenes and action sequences really felt like I'd seen this before, just with different faces. So the film, for me, didn't quite work. I was surprised. I don't know how you felt about Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I was surprised walking out. The film became another example of just how some actors and their presence on the big screen just work.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. As a showcase for his return to the big screen, I think he was one of the highlights of the film. But because of his presence, it really played up for me the smallness of the direction. There's a lot of punches pulled to try to make this a PG-13 film, which 3 of the other 5 films are R-rated, and I think appropriately so for the subject matter. But the main character, played by Emilia Clarke, who plays Sarah Connor, mm-hmm. the future mother of John Connor, is played by a young actress people will know probably from Game of Thrones, a big ensemble cast where she's rarely having to hold down more than 3 to 5 minutes of story. And here she and Jason Clarke, no relation, and a couple other actors share the screen, but none of them really rise, I think, to the presence of Schwarzenegger, and they fail in contrast. But I think the directing, too, Alan Taylor, who is known for a lot of television, and particularly Game of Thrones as well, most recently, his direction, his approach to the material, maybe his sensibilities have just a little more skewed to the small screen. And unfortunately, I think this is one of those few big screen films that may actually improve with a smaller screen and a home experience.
I agree. It was sort of fractured mayhem, and I don't mind mayhem.
Right.
I thoroughly,
Mad Max Fury Road.
I saw that twice. I saw it twice. But this one was just a little bit scrambled, and I think it probably is because the storyline itself, there's kind of like no place to go with it. As you say, it was very much a deja vu moment. For me, particularly, it was that transformation of the liquid metal business. When I first saw that in Terminator 2, when Robert Patrick came up out of the floor, oh my gosh, the coolest special effect ever.
Right.
But this one, they seem to
overwork. That was 25 years ago.
Right.
We've been there, done that.
Exactly.
A quick take on something that people might watch at home?
I've been enjoying a BBC drama, Netflix streaming, called Peaky Blinders. It's a British gangster family in post-World War I. For those who enjoyed Sopranos or Boardwalk Empire, they would certainly enjoy this. But the strong characterization and the storylines, the setting is so different. And the production values are just top-notch. And I think it really deserves a wider viewing audience.
Netflix is indeed doing an amazing job with their original programming. My pick for the week is a few weeks ago I was in Austin and got to catch up with the documentary The Wolf Pack, which was all the rage at the Sundance Film Festival this year. It was directed by Crystal Moselle. This is an example of a above-average film, not a great film, that I highly recommend to people just because the story it tells is so fascinating. This is about the Angulo brothers, six brothers who are born and raised in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and their very controlling father never lets them out of the apartment. So for most of their early life up through their late teens, they literally get out of their apartment once or twice a year, and they become fixated on watching movies. That's kind of their window to the world. And they begin making remakes of these movies, their own versions, particularly Quentin Tarantino's films, with elaborate sets and props and costumes all made by them. Little by little, towards the end of the film, we get to see their independence growing, and then they finally defy their father and launch themselves out into the world, and we get to see what that rebirth is like. So I highly recommend The Wolf Pack. It's available Amazon Instant and I think Vudu and several others. So always great to see you, Gene. And
thank you.
Talk commentary on movies.
Always.
Hope to do this again soon.
Oh, I hope so. Thanks, Chuck.
I've been discussing two theatrical summer film releases, Pixar's animated coming-of-age tale Inside Out and the fifth film in the over 30-year-old Terminator franchise, Terminator Genesis, with Gene Creel, former film studies teacher at El Paso High and UTEP. Both films are in theaters now. We also discussed the smaller screen recommendations Peaky Blinders on Netflix and the documentary The Wolf Pack, available on various video-on-demand services. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. Thanks to Belinda Fernandez for engineering today's show. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.